Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ooh. We are back. This is the Flow Track Podcast. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Kevin Sully, joined by Gordon Mack. Opening ceremonies are today in Tokyo. Got to wait another week, though, for track and field. And today we're going to continue with our Olympic previews. We are talking men's field events and the men's marathon. Gordon, good morning. How are you?
Well, the Olympic ceremonies have already happened. They're over. They happened this morning. We're
I'm on tape.
Yeah, well, the whole world is going to be on tape delay because we can kind of project what this means for when the track events actually happen. All the best track events are going to happen between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. Eastern. And then you're not going to see those track events on national TV, like on major NBC cable, until that evening. The same way there was an opening ceremony this morning at like 5 a.m. And then you'll see who held the flag for USA on primetime at 8 p.m. Did you see who held the flag?
It was the baseball player, right?
Yeah, and Sue Bird.
And Sue Bird.
Baseball player. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Good point about the early morning. I know there are going to be some morning in Tokyo finals, which will end up being a night final for us in the United States. So there will be a couple of those. So keep an eye out on those. But we'll be doing the recap podcast in the morning. I did look at the schedule this morning, and for people like you who have trouble getting up, it's going to be a chore for several days to do it. But it's the Olympics, so we're going to make it happen. Before we get into the preview, though, we did get news about a race that's happening before the Olympics. We just talked about this, Gordon. We just had people write in and they said, hey, is it concerning at all that the 1500 meter team on the men's side is not going to race at all before Tokyo? And then we found out a couple of days ago about the Centro Mile, where not only is Matt Centrowitz going to run, Gordon, he's going to go after Alan Webb's American record, 3:46.91 in Portland on Saturday night. What was your first reaction?
Well, this doesn't count as a race. This counts as we are letting the people watch a workout that happens to be just a 4-lap time trial. He's not gaining anything from getting your feet wet, rusty from racing from this race, for the record. But
When you're going for the American record, they're not going to have it's going to be like Alan Webb's attempt, where the goal is time. But if you're going after an American record, it's not like when he ran 3 800s in a meet. That's a workout. If you're going after the American record, you don't have to call it a race in terms of competition, but he's going and putting everything out there for these
four. A time trial with the only people in the field are your teammates is practice. It's not a race. Like, he is In my mind, he is going to be going from the Olympic trials to the Olympic Games with nothing but practice, where we just got to happen to have one of his practices turn into an American record attempt, which is cool. I'm just saying, it's not a race. It's not.
Okay, continue. Well, we're getting to see him go after America. Listen, yes, this is Matt Centrowitz. Matt Centrowitz has not really done this in his career ever. Yes, he ran that 13 flat when they ran in the forest, the 5K in 2019 when Woody Kincaid broke 13 minutes. But he was not the focal point of it. He was not the centerpiece of it. He doesn't do this basically ever. He doesn't put a time out there. He doesn't chase records. Now, in the 1500 and in other events too, there's people who go after records and there's people who go after medals and there's people who do both. He's been a medal guy. You look at his career resume, the first five or six things you mention are finishes at major championships. They're not his times. In fact, I bet a lot of people couldn't even name you Centro's PBs, right? Unless they're paying real close attention. What they remember is the gold medals. What they remember is him finishing time and time again.
Yeah.
Yeah. His US titles, his top five finishes at Olympics or world championships. That's what people remember about Matt Centrowitz. So I think it's noteworthy in that regard that he's at least taken a shot at it, a big swing, and going after this American record. If you're curious about what his mile PB is and his 1500 meter PB is, if you aren't that keyed into what Centrowitz's been doing, 350 back in 2014 is his mile PB, 7 years ago, and 330 1500 from 2015. So this would be a big step up from that mile PB. 1500, we'd say that converts to 347-ish, 347 high maybe. So in range of that. That was a Monaco 1500 though. I don't know if the Jesuit High School track is as fast as Monaco. I don't know if we have the conversion tables up from Jesuit High School to Monaco. It will be an entirely different race, but I just think it's interesting that he's going for it. He must be confident that he's in at least sub 350 shape if he's going after this. Centro is not the type of person who would just make up a record attempt out of thin air because he's literally never done it his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You have to think he 100% is sub 350 shape and he wants to take advantage of it. It's interesting he is doing this. You know, maybe he's trying to simulate this like you said, like a Monaco, because a lot of times the top 1500 meter runners go to Monaco, they get a fast PB before the Olympic Games, you know, happens in July, and he opted not to do Monaco. And maybe this is like his mini Monaco without having to travel to have like that hard effort to see how far, you know, non-tactical, what type of fitness am I in? And I think he clearly wouldn't do it if he thought he was like a 352, 351, even 350. I think he only is doing this because he thinks he can like at least break 348, maybe 349. And then if you're in that range, hey, let's 346.91 by Alan Webb. Let's do this.
Let's do it.
What is a reason he will do it? What's a reason that he will break 346.91? And then what is a reason he won't do it?
A reason he would break 346 or a reason he's attempting to do it in the first place?
No, the reason why he can do it.
Well, the reason he could do it is because he's not over-raced, that's for sure. He's barely scratched the surface. I think when he ran that 3x800 race / workout, it's so funny when you look up his results page and you see the three results there, and you're just like, oh man, he ran a lot of 800s, and then you're like, oh no, they were all on June 9th. I think he said that tracked pretty well to what he's done in previous seasons. And I've said this about Centro before. He knows the sport forwards and backwards. He knows his own performances forwards and backwards. So he's probably looking at something and comparing it to what shape he was in that 2014, 2015 range. Or I guess you could even say 2016, because the guy won the gold medal in 2016. And he's looking at what he did in terms of workouts in those 3 years. And he's saying something around that or faster than that is possible given my workouts. That would be the reason why.
Yeah. I would say the reason why he would do it is he this is the last thing that this is the last carrot that he wants to get. You know, he's already, as much as he wants to win the Olympics this year, he's already done it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like,
there's something different about winning your second Olympics than winning your first. And
yeah,
I just think this is one thing that he mentally will be, like, super honed in and focused on. Like, I think his loss at the trials didn't bother him that much. I think he recognized, like, all right, cool. I lost one of the 10 that I've won, right? And I think his focus for this will be a lot stronger than I think his focus was for the Olympic trials, which is crazy to think. But I think because he's been through so many Olympic trials, so many U.S. top three finishes, his focus was there. But I think his focus was like, hey, all right, I should win. I want to win, but I'm going to be top three no matter what. And that's how that ran. Here, I think he recognizes, hey, I don't have many sub 350 attempts left in my career. I've said publicly, I feel like I'm in one of my best shapes of my life. So I might as well, this is like one of my last chances here. And I think that is a reason. I think a mental factor of like kind of going all in on his fitness in near the end of his prime to try to get one last attempt at trying to have that top mark of breaking Alan Webb. And it makes sense too. Like, you look at Alan Webb's career and you look at Centro, like, I think when 20 years from now and you look at Alan Webb and Centro, we should be able to have Centro's PB should be faster than Alan Webb's.
Well, you remember Centro's medals, and for Webb, you remember the times. But you brought up an interesting point there, which is, oh, it's one of his last opportunities to do it. But he could do it after the Olympics. So I think it's interesting to note, why is he doing it before the Olympics? And I saw a tweet out there from Kieran O'Leonard, which I think is pretty accurate, basically saying, Timothy Chariot's in the 1500. So you know this 1500 is going to be fast. So it's going to require a big effort from the gun. And perhaps that's what he's thinking as well, too, that this is better preparation for the Olympics than doing a sit and kick type traditional 340, 338, or something along those lines, or even getting into a, even though there aren't any Diamond League races, but a Diamond League type setup where, there's a fast first 400, but it slows a bit during the middle portion, and then he kicks to the end, and then we get a 332, 333. So I'll just read O'Leonard's tweet. He says, smart move by Centro to hit the all-out mile 10 days out from Tokyo. If Chariot is going to take them to the Twilight Zone at the Olympics, best to know you've been there before. Getting your legs to turn over at that level, right? Otherwise, it's going to be a complete shock to the system. And if Chariot goes out and runs, 330 pace or faster from the gun, Centro hasn't really touched on that this year. But with this attempt, he will.
Yeah, and you don't know what his body can handle too, because he's going to go through this and he's going to be like, all right, I know what that, he's going to have memories of 1K into this type of pace of what it's like, and can you hold on for 500 more meters at the Olympic Games? That's a good point. So yeah, there's also that might be a non can I break it reason, but more of a why I'm doing it reason.
Well, it's both at this point. I'll give it a shot because I don't have many other chances. And also, this is the perfect preparation for the type of race I'm going to tackle in Tokyo. Maybe if Timothy Chariot or Ingebrigtsen wasn't in the 1500 for whatever reason, and we almost had that scenario with Chariot, maybe the preparation would be different. I just think Centro is so calculated in how he prepares for these things, and we've seen him get it right a lot of times. Same thing with Jerry Schumacher. They're not just running races to run races. As much as we would like to see him just run races and do an American record attempt for the sake of an American record attempt, it's all fitting into a larger plan. And I'm sure they've molded over quite a bit before they ran this. They didn't just say, hey, I had this written down 2021, go for the American record about 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm just going to do that. It was in my goal book. I had it on my vision board. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to do Jesuit High School, get some of my teammates. We're going to try to run 3:46. No, it's because it fits in with what they're trying to accomplish in Tokyo next week.
Okay, here we go. Does he do it? Yes or no?
I don't think he's going to be able to do it, but I just think that's because that record is really impressive. But I think he's going to obviously PB. I think he'll go sub 350 and he's going to get what he needs to get out of this attempt. If he does do it, we need to reevaluate that whole 1500 meter field in Tokyo, which we'll do next week when we preview the podcast. Because if he has his closing speed and he's able to run a 3:46 mile, are you kidding me? We need to talk more about Centro as a threat here in this race, in any sort of race at that point.
So what I should do is I should go on one of the betting sites. And as soon as I see the result, before those betting sites are watching a random time trial in Jesuit High School, if he runs 3:46, his like 10-1 odds, you hammer that, right? That's the plan? So that's what we can go win. Your house and my house, we could have four houses. That's what we could do, man. But because the odds aren't going to move at 9 p.m. in Jesuit on a Sunday or Saturday, or whenever the race is. So. Because I don't think his odds are that good right now. What's the Centro odds? What are looking up?
You could pull it up. But my point here is if you had to list a weakness for Centro, it's, well, how is he going to do in these straight from the gun type races? Because you have to feel pretty good about his clothes. And I know, he got chased down by Hawker in Eugene. But traditionally, he's pretty good. He's pretty good at closing in these races. Hawker was great. All credit to him in that race. But if he has the strength to be able to run a 3:46 mile and you combine that with the way he navigates rounds, how tactically sound he is, and then that closing burst, then he's making a pretty strong case. What are his odds?
Plus 2,000. So you gamble $100 and you win $2,000.
All right.
So we'll 20 see. To 1. We'll he's 20 to 1 odds. And the bet MGM is not going to know.
No, they're not moving that those.
This is happening if he runs 3:46.
Well, so we can make a lot of money. I'd be interested to know, like, are any of those odds actually moving, or do they set those as the Olympic odds and then they're locked in? Because
it moves based on when they see everyone. Oh, why is everyone gambling on this person? Oops, let's make it worse odds. Because too many people are doing it.
I know, but I'm saying, are they taking in new information with regard to race results? I'm sure they'll look at start lists, and if people scratch, they'll take them off and adjust odds accordingly. But to your point, I don't think they're tuned in.
They're not going to be tuned in enough to know about his mile, right? Because his start list is only going to have his 3:34, 1500 season's best or whatever.
Yeah. All right.
But he is a defending Olympic champ, so I guess that will help him. But 20 to 1 odds. And if he runs 3:46 mile, boom.
Did you see how low Josh Kerr – pull those odds up, because I saw one where Josh Kerr was a super long shot.
So Josh Kerr is not on the odd on BetMGM.
Yeah. On one, he was a big long shot. And Oliver Hoare wasn't even listed, which, it's going to be tough to beat Ingebrigtsen.
Well, it's to win.
And Chariot. Yeah. But I'm saying – And a lot of those things, you're sort of betting on, does this person, like, is there an injury or some sort of issue that keeps them from getting to the final? And if you told me if there's an issue with Chariot or Ingebrigtsen, then everybody's odds just shoot up dramatically. And those two guys particularly, Hoare and Kerr, have been running so well, you'd think they'd be right there in the mix. And they're behind a lot of people who I think don't have as good a shot. In any regard, we are going to preview right now the field events and the marathon for the Olympics. Thanks everybody for tuning in live on YouTube. If you got questions, comments, put them in the chat as we go. We're going to go in this order this time. We're going to start with the marathon, because that's the event that has Eliud Kipchoge. Then we're going to go to the decathlon, because the multi people were real excited last time. So we're going to reward them in the chat for going second. Then we'll go shot put, high jump, long jump, pole vault, triple jump, discus, hammer, and javelin. And of course, Gordon's rankings are on the site in every single event. Those are Gordon's top 10 projections, I'm guessing. And if we start with a marathon, big on Galen Rupp here. I got to say, you are very confident in one Galen Rupp. Eliud Kipchoge one, then Rupp two, Shira Katata of Ethiopia, Lawrence Chirono, Kenya. Then you have Suguro Osako of Japan five, Sisse Lema of Ethiopia six, Desisa seven, Bashir Abdi eight, Amos Kiprotu nine, and Özbülent of Turkey, the top 10. So I think that's a solid top 10. It's just the order, figuring out who goes where. Again, I think you're pretty high. You're pretty bullish on Galen Rupp, but obviously number one, Eliud Kipchoge. We saw him lose that race in London during 2020, but came back, went to the airport in the Netherlands, literally, and ran a marathon, ran 204.30, which looked pretty comfortable for him. Obviously, he's more vulnerable. His 10 marathon streak was snapped. He's more vulnerable than we thought just based on that London loss. But I don't see any way you could say he's not the favorite in this race.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one. Yeah, the only way Eliud loses is going to be Eliud. It's not going to be someone else outrunning him. It's going to be him having a side stitch or something, sick, yeah, or I don't know, twist his ankle. It's Kipchoge's race to lose. I do want to. I don't really know what else we need to add to Kipchoge. I mean, his legacy's already set. I think even if he were to finish dead last, we would just look at this performance as an asterisk to his actual career. So there's nothing really he needs to prove or do. I'm sure, obviously, he wants to win, but I think the pressure on the legacy of like, what does this mean or not mean? I feel like it's already done. This is just like extra. This is, you know, Shaquille O'Neal on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hey, maybe we win, maybe we don't. I don't know. You know, it's Dwayne Wade coming back to Miami Heat. But the only difference is he's on a team. It's like, it would be like Shaquille O'Neal playing for the Warriors when the Warriors are really good. It's like, hey, you're going to probably win. So, but he's still good. Anyway. Okay. I'm trying to make an NBA reference. I love my NBA references.
I think a better one would have been Karl Malone going to the Lakers, except Karl Malone never won a title. So it's kind of tough to find the exact one. Yeah. Okay, so then we'll go to the next person on your rankings, which is Rupp. And the reason why I think you're a little optimistic on Rupp, number one, the rest of the field is obviously really good. Chirono in particular, he won Boston and Chicago in 2019 and was second in Valencia last year and ran 203. So he's sharp right now. Desisa's always good. Katata's been great recently. And Rupp, you look back, and he hasn't run a marathon since the Olympic trials. He's run some 10Ks this year. His last marathon pre-trials, his last international marathon where he had a field like this, was 2018. Finished fifth in Chicago. That was the same year he, you know, ran the fast in Prague, ran his 206 there. That was also the year he DNF'd in Boston. So it's been a while since we've seen Rupp in a marathon. And if he's a 205, 206 guy, even if you say he's a 204 guy, there's a lot of people in this field who can run with him at that pace. And I get it. It's going to be a championship race. So, and Rupp's thrived in those sort of settings before, but it's just been a while since we've seen him in a marathon with a field of this caliber, and he's 35 now.
Yeah, and I agree it's been a while, but I think there's a reason for that. I think he is not trying to use up all of. I think he knows he has limited bullets left in his chamber, and he's trying and he saved them these past year and a half, 2+ years for just the Olympic trials and the Olympic Games. I mean, it wasn't even close when his like Atlanta performance, while it's only a 209, he just looked like he was like just so much better than everyone else. And obviously it's an American, so take that with a grain of salt.
He was,
but
yeah.
He didn't have any sign of like, hey, or, you know, you're kind of, I think he knew coming off of his injury. When did he get injured? In 20?
That was 19. He didn't race.
19?
2019.
He knew coming.
It was the end of, yeah.
coming off his injury in 2019 and also the whole Salazar debacle, I think he's realized, hey, I don't need to prove myself anymore in any race moving forward. The only thing I need to do is set myself up for to go all in on the most important championship races, and that is qualifying for the Olympics and then the Olympic Games. I think he's just been saving it all up for this moment. I think everything we've seen since 2019 has been in preparation for this one race, and that's the reason he hasn't tried to run a fast time here or there, or did the marathon project. You know, he's done a bunch of shorter stuff. I think he's saving it all up for this one moment, and it's been circled on his calendar for now, you know, 4 years. So
yeah, that's right. I think that's probably his approach. I think you're probably accurate there. And he's run some fast halves. Again, I'm not saying he's going to be a non-factor here. I absolutely think he's going to be a factor. I just look at, let's compare this to 2016, the last time he was at the Olympics, and he got the medal there. He got the bronze. Did he improve his position at all? Well, Kipchoge is still around, and the gap between him and Kipchoge, I think, is the same, because both of them have shown vulnerabilities since then. So maybe before, Kipchoge was a 10 out of 10, and if Rupp was an 8 out of 10, maybe Kipchoge is now a 9.9 or something, and Rupp is just a tick down from what he was before. But the rest of the world is still there. That's my point here. So he's going to have to be back into peak Rupp form to beat people like Katada and Chirono and De Sisa. Because what is success for Rupp here? Is it a medal?
I mean, I think he wants gold, but I think he'll come back, be happy with a second or third.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So I mean, if Kipchoge's beatable, right? We've seen it. He lost in London. Was it London or London? So, London. I mean, I don't think Kipchoge's going to lose. I think he'll put together a good race. But in that 5 to 10% chance, Kipchoge is having that bad day, Rupp wants to be as prepared as possible to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah. I have 25% chance to medal, but it sounds like you'd put him much higher.
Okay. So 25% chance to medal. Where do you have him finishing? If you're a gambler, where is he finishing?
Can I give you a range, or do I have to give you a number?
No, you can give me a number. I had to do a number. I had to pick. I picked second. What are you picking?
I would not rank. So there's a difference between ranking and where I would pick him. I would rank him lower. I would rank him to the back half. Well, no, because
what position is he going to finish?
I will pick him for fourth. But I would rank him lower than that. But I think because of the race conditions and the fact that it's a championship style race, I think that will help get him up. But I would pick him for fourth. So
fourth is like, I want to call you a medal contender, but I don't want to do it. That fourth is where you put the people who you want to say you're good, but you don't actually want to say it.
Well, I think it's going to be Kipchoge, Chirono, and Katada, top three, and then Rupp. I mean, I give you my whole 10 if you want.
I could
go into deep. Like, I legitimately think he's going to run fourth, and I think that's going to be a great result, all things considered. But because people are judging him on medal or bust, or if they're looking at gold or bust, they're not gonna give him the credit that's due. Like, this field is legit. Like I said, Chirono has done it all. He's won the tactical races. He's won the championship style races in Boston. And then he just got second in that ridiculously fast Valencia race where he ran 203 low. Like, the guy is solid. The guy could win the entire race. And then you got to count on Kipchoge to come through. So I'll put Rupp for fourth. I would not say his chances of winning are zero, or even I won. I'd probably put it a couple ticks higher than that. Like, I think on the right day, if the things break for him, he could win this race, but more often than not, I think he'd be in that, around that fourth place range.
Got a question about the marathon. Sarah Likes Penguins asks, What do you think of Kalem Hawkins' chances? He hasn't run much recently, but he ran super impressive for fourth in Doha.
Yeah, and we were there in Doha. Link and I were there in Doha watching that men's marathon, which was just a wild ride. And Hawkins puts it all out there. I mean, his PB's just 208. So I think it just depends on the race. And we're going to know halfway, maybe a little bit past halfway, maybe even before halfway, what type of race we're going to see. And if it's a weather is bad, the favorites are struggling type of race, I think Kalem Hawkins can work his way in there into the top 10, maybe even into the top five. But
I think
if it's a race that early on you can see, hey, the favorites are keeping the pace honest, they're whittling this thing down, but they're not going so fast that half the field is going to fall apart, it'll be tough for him, because as I mentioned before, there's so many people with 205 PBs here. Like we mentioned Bashir Abdi on here. I mean, you dude ran 204.49 in Tokyo. Osborne's run 204.16. Like there's just so many people who are capable of running sub 205, sub 206 that it's tough for people, like him, like you could talk about the other two Americans, like Riley, like Abdi Abdurrahman, to get some traction.
I think the major sleeper is Suguru Osaka, who's running in his home country. Former mm-hmm. NOP athlete. I think he's been running well in a lot of his marathons and his build up to go from the track to the marathon. I have him finishing, I think, fifth or sixth on my rankings. I could see him being that surprise third place finisher the way Rupp was the surprise third place finisher. And Japan will go nuts, right? If he got a mm-hmm. medal in the because Japan loves distance running. It's one of their favorite pastimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Japan's really good low key in the distance running. And I think he's like their big hope to try to take down the East Africans and Galen Rupp to try to medal. So I think Suguru Osaka is going to be that low key potential medalist.
I'm looking at previous Olympic marathons as a guide here. 2016, Kipchoge, Lalisa, Rupp. Makes sense. That one went to form at least with the medalist. But then you go back to 2012. I don't think anybody had Stephen Kiprotich winning that thing. And then you had a lot of favorites fall off. You had a lot of DNFs in that field, right? You had nobody from Ethiopia in that race perform well at all. At all, at all, at all, at all. I mean, that was what is their top finisher? Looking this up right now. Everybody DNF'd in 2012. From Ethiopia. All three. They were 0-for-3 on getting people to the finish line in 2012. 2008, we all know Sammy Wanjiru in the heat. Little more chalk there with expected names. But then you go to 2004, that was the Meb Silver year, right? That was it was Baldini, Meb, and De Lima. It was Italy, US, Brazil top three. Like, who had that as a top three? It feels like about 50% of the time we get some unexpected results here, not just for gold, but also when you look at the whole medal picture. That was also the year when someone came onto the course and tackled De Lima in the latter miles, which no doubt hampered his ability to get across the line. But even still, it was not a top three that you would have forecasted going in. So is this going to be a 2016 year, or is this going to be a 2012 year? Is it going to be a 2008 type of year, or is it going to be a 2004 type of year? And where Hawkins and all these other people factor in is when it's a 2004 type year, or a 2012 year when everybody from Ethiopia drops out, doesn't finish the race.
And it's going to be hot, so we're not going to see 203.
Right.
We're not going to see 204, so... Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's what we're going to see. I'm not saying, hey, he ran 203 and Valencia's going to run 203 now. But what I mean is, are we going to see a race where they run the equivalent type of time given the weather conditions, where the best people, the people with the most major wins and the people who have the better PRs are able to hold it together and control the race versus what we've seen in the past where things go completely haywire. Because it was ridiculously hot in Beijing in 2008, and Wanjiru still won. It wasn't the fastest time, you know, in the world, but 206 in that heat, a lot of people think that's one of the best marathons ever, regardless of time, just because of the conditions. So the conditions can be bad, and the favorite can still win, is basically what I'm saying. Is it going to be one of those, or is it going to be a situation where everything gets thrown out, and by 30K, we're thinking, wait, one of these people's going to get the gold medal? Like, it's going to be Suguru Osako or Abdi Abdurrahman's going to be a gold medalist? What's going on? This is the craziest marathon ever.
Isn't it crazy that in 1904, 328 won the marathon at the Olympics?
Yeah.
347 was third.
I think about that all the time when I think about my career and just like how it would have been different. All I needed to be would be born 100 years
earlier.
You know what would be a great movie?
Like a time trial movie, but it's athletics based. And so an athlete trains really hard, gets good, and then obviously can't compete well in the current day, so gets a time machine and goes back to the early 1900s and just like wins Olympic medals and becomes like the GOAT of distance running because they're able to run like a 2:59 marathon and everyone's like, oh my God, you're like the greatest of all time. And you just basically live like what it's like to be a GOAT in running.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because but you have your fitness.
You have your 2020 fitness, but you're in 1920. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
I like that. Although 1920, I'm looking it up. Hannes Kolmanian of Finland threw down a 232. It's pretty good.
Okay, so maybe I go to 1904.
Well, there's a lot of people who can run 232 now. I'm saying me personally being as slow, I gotta go way back. Someone asked in the chat, do you think Kipchoge will go for the Olympic record, which is the Wanjiru mark 206.32? I don't think he cares at all about that. I think this is all about – you're going to see Kipchoge control this race, and you're going to see, because of who he is, people defer to Kipchoge, I think, in this race. And he is going to dictate when the moves are made. He's going to dictate how quick this pace goes, and he's going to run it in the way that he thinks is best for him. Could he accidentally get the Olympic record? 100% he could, because he could run 205 in horrible conditions. But will that be his focus? No, I do not believe so.
All right. We've been 36 minutes into the podcast. Time to do 15 more events of previewing.
It's decathlon time. It is decathlon time. I'm expecting the chat to come alive right now. That's the cue for the chat to come alive. Am I putting too much stock into the chat that they're not going to like the decathlon? Well, if they like the heptathlon, they should also like the decathlon, because this is interesting. Because you got Kevin Mayer of France, 2017 world champion, world record holder, took Ash Neaton's world record, Gordon.
I know.
But then, as they say, things got complicated. DNF'd in 2019 with an injury. And he doesn't have any outdoor multis this year. Competed indoors in a heptathlon. But things haven't been that smooth since he broke Eaton's record. Now facing him is a guy named Damian Warner of Canada, who won Goatsies, which he's done numerous times before. But this time set a PB, 88.95. He's trying to get that first global gold, Gordon. He's got three bronzes and a silver outdoors. He's got more medals indoors, but none of them are gold. Mayer's been in the way. Ashton Eaton's been in the way. He's never been able to get it done. Third-ranked guy, you got Nicholas Kahl there. Good pick from Germany, 2019 world champ. Only fifth at Goatsies, and he DNF'd at another competition, so some questions about him. Other notable names from the U.S., Garrett Scantling, 86.47, got his PB at the U.S. Olympic Trials. And then Maciel Webo, who was silver in Doha, and he is coming off a ninth-place finish at Goatsies. So can Mayer get back on track? Will Damian Warner finally get his gold? What say you, Gordon?
I think Warner's can continue to be forever a bridesmaid, never the groom. Is that the phrase? Forever bridesmaid, never a groom?
No, a bride.
Forever a bridesmaid, never a bride. I think Warner I think he's obviously still going to finish in medal, but I think the mayor factor of, like, is he healthy? He hasn't done a full decath in some time. He had a solid indoor, and I think his lack of outdoor decath is just a factor of situational competitions with COVID and all that stuff. And the decathlon's a very under-contested event. So he's like, all right, I'm fine. I'll be ready to go. I do think Warner is going to challenge him, obviously, the most. But I think Mayer's going to find a way to pull it out.
I think it's going to be Warner's time. You can add him to the long list of people who have struggled to get over the hump time and time and time again and finally get it done. I think Mayer's going to be tough to beat. Obviously, he's got the world record for a reason. He's gotten global gold in the past. But when you knock on the door as many times as Damian Warner knocks on the door, eventually opportunity answers, and opportunity is going to be there in Tokyo. I'm feeling good about Damian Warner getting it done this time. Because you look not just at how he's done on major championship meets, but like you look at GOATSIS, which is, the for people don't know, the main multi-event competition. He's won it every year since 2016, and he won it in 2013. So he's won 5 in a row, and he's won 6 overall. So he can beat really good people. It's just a matter of doing it when a gold medal is at stake, and I think this is the time for it to happen. U.S. side of things with Scantling up there, I put their medal odds at 15%. Do you think that's too high?
No, I could see Scantling finding a third. I think the only American will be a third place finisher. Scantling's been coming on strong, obviously second in the world right now with his mark. Maybe a little higher, maybe more like 33.333%, one third.
Sarah also picks Warner. She said he looked good. He looked controlled and almost easy in Goatsies. Also, Warner had to train at a hockey rink, no ice during the pandemic because tracks were closed. I'm feeling even better about my pick now, Gordon. I like people who train in a hockey rink with no ice. All right, let's move on. Next event on the list, shot put. Convince me why I should not bet my entire house, if I have a house still, on Ryan Crouser, Gordon.
Here's the thing. Ryan Crouser should be the overwhelming favorite. He is the betting favorite by a large margin. But I truly can see a world where Joe Kovacs wins.
Explain that world to me. I want to know about this world. Explain it to me.
When's the last 20? What was it? I mean, look at this list.
2019.
Was it 2019 when he won? Who won in 2019?
Kovacs.
Yeah.
By a centimeter.
If that can happen, if a center, all you need is a centimeter, man. That's my new T-shirt. All you need is a centimeter. Has multiple meanings. All you need is a centimeter. but I think Joe Kovacs, he's a vet. He knows what he's got to do. I think if Ryan Crouser has a couple bad throws, maybe fouls a couple, one or two, just doesn't feel on, and Ryan Crouser is sitting there with, you know, a 22.98 as his best because he's just having a shit,
horrible 22.98,
and then Kovacs is like, let's go, and then he throws 22.99.
Okay.
I can see it happening, man. I can see it.
Since 2016, beginning at the Olympic trials in 2016, these guys have thrown against each other 27 times.
Ooh.
Do you know what
this is? A good stat. I'm excited for the stat.
Do you know what the record is?
I do not know what the record is.
It's 25-2 in favor of Crouser.
Okay, what are the two twos?
The two, one of them is the competition that you just mentioned, the 2019 World Championships. The 2019 World Championships. The other one comes from a major championship, and that being the World Championships in London in 2017, where Kovacs got silver and Krauser got sixth. But that's it.
Okay. I mean, so
what it career wise, it's 25-6. Well, hold on though. Career, it's 25-6. Kovacs won the first four, but since then it's been 25-2. But no, I mean, Krauser's beat him in a bunch of U.S. champs. Obviously, Krauser beat him in Rio. They went 1-2 there. But yes,
yeah. But since Rio, there's only been two major global outdoor championships, and he's 2-0 against them.
Okay,
undefeated, never lost, never lost.
Counterpoint: since Rio, Ryan Krauser's thrown 23-37.
Yeah, but since Rio, he's always lost to Joe Kovacs. Hey, Joe Kovacs is a Bethlehem, PA dude. Went to Becca High. So I gotta rep my hometown hero. I'm just saying, man, 2-0. It's not.
I gave you a 25-0 stat, and you pulled out the two to discount the other 25.
Yeah, but the two are the one that matters most. Clayton Murphy says it's best. The only thing that matters is what you do at the World Championships or the
Global Olympics
Championships.
Don't count. So the Olympics
don't
count.
Well, since the Olympics. So if it's since the Olympics,
trials.
You don't count that.
No, I said since
trials
the trials.
Don't matter. It's who cares
no,
if you
I'm
win
including
or lose 26. Trials.
Why are you discounting the Rio Olympics is my question.
Because
he beat him at the Rio Olympics.
Because the timeline starts when after the Olympics. It's you don't include the Olympics. It's like, you know, it's like AD and BC. You don't include year zero. You just you start with one.
I'm saying starting from the Olympic trials in 2016 to now, Ryan Krauser is 25-2 against Joe Kovacs. That includes the Olympic Games in Rio, where Krauser was the gold medalist and Kovacs was a silver medalist. So,
well, I'm not counting that. I'm counting since
I know
the
you're
Olympics.
Not counting that. And I'm telling you why it's. I'm saying you're wrong for not counting it. Listen. This is fun.
Why include 2016 stats? It's 2021, man. We are
okay.
How about this?
Include 2021?
Past 4 years. How about in the past 4 years, he's 2-0 in global championships.
When do you want me to start counting? Do you want me to start counting from 2020 on? Because he's 5-0.
I want you to start counting from September of 2016.
From September of 2016. Okay, I will indulge. From September of 2016 on. So take away three Krauser wins. So instead of being 25-2, he's 22-2. Does that make you feel better?
And he's 0-2 in global championships.
Okay, how about I start it after the London World Championships? Then he's just 0-1. No, I'm taking Krauser. He called his shot. He threw it. He knew it was going to be a world record, 23-37. I think he's going to break his world record again here. But this is fun. This is going to be great. The competition in Doha was what a lot of people say was the greatest field event competition in history between Krauser, Kovacs, and Thomas Walsh, who don't discount Thomas Walsh either. Bronze in 19 and 16, gold in 17. He's thrown 22.90. No, his PB is 1 cent. No. I'm not going to let you make this huge argument for Kovacs and then discount Thomas Walsh. Whose PB is 1 centimeter farther back. Come on. Have some consistency here.
Okay. I'll have some consistency. Thomas Walsh.
I'm going to look up his.
Has never beaten Joe Kovacs. Although he has since 2019. I don't know what I'm saying.
Since 2019. Krauser versus Walsh, all time 17-10. With the advantage to Krauser. They've actually thrown against each other twice this year.
Krauser is going to win for what it's worth. But
okay,
Joe Kovacs, Bethel, PA. Let's go.
I have U.S. medal odds here, 99%. 99% for a medal.
99? No, 100%.
Well, I don't really put anything at 100 or 0 for my
You did
my
with your house with Noah Lyles. Winning
okay,
the 200,
stop bringing
which
that
I
up.
Low key,
that was
which
the worst thing.
previewing ahead. When we talk about it next week.
Yeah.
I may or may not think Noah Lyles wins the 200.
Yeah, you're – okay, yeah, I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. And it's not because I'm worried about my house. It's not because I'm worried about my house. It's because of you somehow talked yourself into a guy not never beating another guy being the favorite over the guy. But I'm not going to talk about that now. I'm not going to let you distract me because the next thing up is the shot put, which we're going to discuss.
We already talked shot put.
Oh, sorry, high jump. High jump. We're going high jump. You have Ilya Ivanyuk, authorized neutral athlete number one in your rankings. Then you have Javon Harrison, Mikhail Akimenko, another authorized neutral athlete number three, Mutaz Eshabarsim, four, and then Maxim Nedisenko of Belarus in five. So a couple notes on these gentlemen. So Ivanyuk, 237 is his personal best. He did that this year. Won Diamond League twice. He's got the bronze from 2019. Javon Harrison, NCAA champ. Akimenko, silver in 19. Barsim is interesting. Barsim is interesting. He's the most well-known of any of these guys internationally because he's won gold. But his season best is only 230, and he was fifth in his last competition. So I'm curious to see what he can do. And then you have Nedisenko of Belarus with 237 as well, too. So some 237, 236, 235 guys. But then the person who is the reigning world champion has only got to 230 this year.
Yeah. I think the big question coming out of here, obviously Javon Harrison is doing the double with high jump, long jump.
Love it.
I do think the high jump is going to be harder for him to win than the long jump.
I agree.
I just think I think it's going to take a 238 potentially to win. I'm not sure if Harrison's ready to do that. Maybe he is. He's Puma now, so Mr. Jumps Puma. Maybe he's ready to go 238 and shock the world.
You had him on the pod.
He's got Mondo Duplantis. He's got Mondo Duplantis on his team now, so he's good at going to new heights. So maybe he'll take a. I'm turning this into an ad for Puma. What am I doing?
Yeah, what are you doing here, man?
What am I doing?
Here. Let me give you – actually, I'm going to wait on his schedule. I can break down his schedule for you to see just how interesting this double is going to be. But
well, I already broke down his schedule with him on a podcast. Did you listen to it?
Yes, but for the people who are tuning in for the preview, day one, high jump qualifying. Day two, long jump qualifying. Day three, high jump final. Day four, long jump final. So very doable for him. That's easy for him to do. I'm just curious about Barsim. I think he's the one guy who can totally, if he shows up and is going high 230s, I think that's gonna change things because he's beaten these guys before.
Yeah, I don't think Barsim's gonna be there. I think if Barsim could jump 235, he would have jumped 235 by now. I don't see him all of a sudden jumping 235 in August. I think he's going to tap out at like a 232, 233. So I think Barsim's not going to medal. I think it's going to be between the authorized athletes and Harrison, which is great. I love it when authorized neutral athletes are in contention to win because I love me some authorized neutral athlete national anthems. They're great.
Yeah.
It's just Sleep music. What is it's just like a white noise. Is that what it is? It's just like it's just neutral. I don't know. What do they play?
They play the World Athletics, previously the IAAF song, I thought.
Is it the Diamond League? Dun, 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 dun.
No, that would be song? That would be a thing of nightmares. I've had some ideas in the past of songs that they can use, but now since this is becoming a trend, I think they should get to pick. Any song that they want. But it has to be like a pop song. It can't be any country's anthem. It needs to be a song that is popular.
Or they can do their country's anthem, but like a remix version, like an R. Kelly remix Ignition, where, you know, like that type of stuff.
Okay, a remix of the anthem.
Or they can do Kanye's new song, right? Have you heard Kanye's new song, the Doda or whatever? I haven't. Everyone tweets about it, though. I feel like I'm getting old.
Well, he did it in the Shaqiri ad, right?
No, but he just did a listening party last night. Everyone was tweeting about it. I didn't know.
Were you invited? Okay.
I wasn't invited. I should have been
long
invited.
Long jump.
No, wait. I want to say something about high jump.
Then do it. Stop talking about Kanye.
So for people who don't know, a few weeks ago, Anika McPherson, I believed, was snubbed from being on the Olympic team. I did a whole video on it, 16 minute long, about why Anika should have been selected by USATF. You can watch the video. It's really detailed. Long story short, basically, you had to be top 32 to be selected. Anika was 33rd, but there were three Americans ahead of her. So she should have been 32nd because one of those three Americans should not have been on that list. That American should, Taina Butts, who finished, I believe, 14th at the trials. USATF should have removed her from the list to therefore allow Anika to be top 32 and then eligible to be selected. I made this video. Some people said, hey, USATF is not allowed to remove Taina Butts from the list because, hey, we can't, USATF can't remove people. But the World Athletics rule says clearly you can. Basically, I can highlight this document that Anika McPherson tweeted out. Basically, USATF had till June 29th, right before July 1st, to tell World Athletics who they wanted to pick. And basically, USATF should have told World Athletics on June 29th, before the deadline on July 1st, hey, don't, we're not gonna nominate Taina Butts. She finished 14th at our meet. We're not gonna pick her. Please extend your list to the next eligible athlete. And then World Athletics would have done that, and they would have gone to the 33rd ranked person, which was Anika McPherson, who finished second at our trials. And then they would have extended an invite to Anika, and USATF would have been able to send the first place, second place, and fourth place finishers. However, USATF didn't do that. They didn't do it either because of negligence, because they didn't know they were allowed to do that. Maybe they thought, hey, if we remove Taina Butts, we might have a lawsuit on our hands. But they were within the rules clearly written by World Athletics to remove an athlete from their quota in order to ensure that a different athlete gets invited into quota, and that different athlete would have been Anika, who again finished second, and USATF should try to honor second over 14th. Now, it is July 23rd when I'm talking about this. Olympics are in a week. Is there still any slimmer of hope for Anika to be on the team? Technically, yes. USATF does have a clause in their rules that they're allowed to remove people from a team for different reasons. One is injury. Another is positive test. Another one is, I forget what the third one is. I don't know. Ineligible. And then the fourth one is clerical or administrative selection error, where they make an error. And this is clearly the error. So they have in the rules that they're allowed to fix mistakes. So that's one thing. Even though technically you could say it's final, they're allowed to switch based on mistakes. They made a mistake. They should not be sending the 14th place finisher over the second place finisher over a technicality that they refuse to acknowledge. I'm saying is there's a rule book. It's in the rules. You're allowed to remove an athlete from the quota, and they didn't do it. And they should have. And Taina Butts recently jumped like 175. So it's not like Taina had like a bad day at the trials. She's not jumping over 190, which is what Anika has done. Regardless, it sucks. It's a travesty for Anika. You got to feel for her. I'm sure Taina is kind of like, I'm sorry, I don't know. Like, it's nothing on Ty Butts. She's not the one who picked herself, right? It's USATF who did the problem. So this has nothing to do with Ty Butts Townsend. But Anika McPherson had a way to be on the Olympic team, and USATF did not use the rules that were given to them to allow her to be on the team. And Anika deserved preferential treatment over Taina Butts because Anika finished second at the trials and Ty Butts finished 14th. This isn't hey, let me in because technically I was here. Even though I finished eighth, let me in. USATF should have sent their first, second, fourth place finishers, not the first, fourth, and 14th place finishers. And it was within the rules. You're allowed to remove someone from the quota. And USATF chose not to remove Taina Butts from the quota. Watch the full video. I talk about it. I don't know what else to do. Do you have any thoughts on this whole situation?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. And I think we were all wondering with the rankings, not if, but when a situation like this would come up, because we knew it wasn't going to be clear cut. And we thought it might be something like the men's 1500, but it ended up being the women's high jump where there was a situation like this, hoping that things get a little clearer by the time we do this the next time there's a major championship, which would be next year. And listen, they're probably going to start leaning on the rankings more, not less. That's the reality of it. So these things need to be clarified even further. Let's move on to the next event that we're previewing. Men's long jump, the other half of the Harrison double. Not the favorite in this event, we should mention, but has the ability to win. And you think he has a better chance in this one than he does in the high jump. The favorite, your favorite here, is Tentegolu of Greece, then Gale of Jamaica, who won in Doha. You have Harrison third, Echevarria, who's had some massive jumps over the past couple of years, of Cuba in fourth, and then Stephen McCarter and Marquise Dendy fifth and sixth. So a strong event for the U.S. if you're watching from that perspective. Tentoglu has 860, best two jumps of the year, so you like him for that. Gale obviously is proven commodity. Echevarria, he's got that wind-aided 892 PB, which is nuts, and an 868 legal PB, but he's only done 838 this year, and he's gotten beat a couple times. So he feels like the wild card to me. He could go there and just destroy everybody, or he could finish fifth. I mean, he was third in Doha. So I don't really know what to expect from him. If you're going on your Carl Lewis theory of consistency, you might lean more towards Gale in this event, or Tentoglu, of course.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring up what the odds are. Tentoglu is the favorite, but only a +275. So, and then Harrison is second favorite, +400. So no one is like heavy favorites, right? They think it's basically a wide open field between Harrison, Tikola, Gale.
Yeah.
I think that's why I think Harrison has the best shot to win this event, because I think Harrison has consistently been jumping well. He hasn't had a flash in the pan type performance. He's been jumping over 8 meters all of the time. Like, his worst mark he'll ever throw down will be like an 810. Mm-hmm. I think Harrison is going to find a way to win this.
I don't know, man. Tentoglu's been pretty solid too. You're looking at three jumps, 8.38 or farther too. Harrison's done it twice. So do you think the college season is going to catch up to Harrison at all?
No.
I know it doesn't look like he's been fazed at all by it, but I just wonder.
No, he's been used to doing this. I think it's just going to be... Nah, I don't think he's going to be burnt out. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's been through the enough doubles and triples or whatever he's been doing through SECs and NCAAs that he's going to be – the workload's not going to feel any different. So I don't think he's going to feel tired.
All right.
Yeah, understand why Tentegola is the favorite. I ranked him the favorite. I ranked him number one. But I think Harrison – what I see is Harrison also has the mental factor, the long jumps after the high jump. So I could see him like coming off of like a third or second or even a fourth in the high jump. And then he's like, all right, here we go. I'm going to get my gold now. Like, you have that extra motivation from a loss.
Yeah. I just want to see, I feel like there's a lot of potential for a huge jump here, be it from Echevarria or Harrison, or another one from Tentegolu. I just want to see something big, is what I'm saying here. I'm cheering for distance in this one, Gordon. I just want to see a big number on the board. That's all I want to see.
You're cheering for like distance running or distance, actual distance? Like
actual distance in the long jump. I'm cheering for an 870. That's what I'm cheering for. I'm on team 870. I might see if Lincoln can make me a shirt that just says 8.0. And like the greater than 8.70. I don't know. I want like a historical mark in the long jump. Like, I've seen, you know, Echevarria's done the 868. He's done 890, but it was windy, as I mentioned before. I don't know. I think we could see it if we get the right conditions and the right competition. But I just want to see something big. Anyway, triple jump. What are your thoughts on the triple jump?
My thoughts, I got three thoughts on the triple jump. Thought one of the triple jump. Let me bring up my rankings. So we normally have Trav. I think Travis is gone now. So now our rankings are on going to be just us.
Oh, I should mention too, by the way, Gale was 869. Gale was 869 in Doha. So it's not like he can't go far too. So maybe I'm even, maybe I want something more than 870. Maybe I want to get greedy. Maybe I want an all-time 874 would get you top 10 all time. Maybe that's what I want to see. All right. Triple jump.
The thought number one is a bummer thought. No Christian Taylor, right? We've already kind of gone through the reality that Christian Taylor wasn't going to be at the Olympics. I think, though, the way Zango has been jumping, that Christian Taylor probably might not have won. So maybe it's a good thing he got hurt. Not I'm being facetious when I say that, but it is a bummer with no Christian Taylor. I love seeing him jumping in the fifth and sixth round, finding a way to always be there to get that gold medal or silver at worst. So that's my first thought, is bummer that's no Christian Taylor of USA.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll be back by 2022. Thought number two is you want to see distance. I think we will see distance with Zango. I think Zango is huge favorite over everyone else.
Pichardo?
I think Pichardo will push him. Mm-hmm. But I think Zango's the one who's going to end up farthest, aka longest distance. And then I think we might be feel a little disappointed from Will Clay and Donald Scott of USA. I think without Christian Taylor there, USA's like dominance in the event is going to feel a little muted. Clay could find a way to find a way on the top three, but I just don't see it happening this year. I have Cuba's Andy Diaz finishing third on my
So
rank.
Clay, I mean, Clay, super consistent, obviously, throughout his career. Four silvers, three bronzes, outdoors. And he's jumped 8.14. It's hard to figure out these Olympics for him because he's only jumped in two meets. So we just don't know. So I'm not going to count him out just because he's never had a bad championship, basically. He's always in the mix seemingly every single time. So I think I don't think he's going to be a non-factor. I think he'll be there. But I agree. I think Zango could go huge. I mean, indoor world record. He's gone over 18 meters. Pichardo obviously has been super solid. He's got medals too. Diaz, it's 1763. Will that be enough? I don't know. You also got Triki in there from Algeria, 1733. I put the medal odds at 30%. Sounds like you'd go lower than that for the U.S.
Yeah, I'll probably go lower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next up, let's go pole vault. Pole vault, where Mondo Duplantis is the favorite. 6.15. He's got the world record. He's vaulted 6.10 this year. Doesn't have a global gold, though. Does not have that global outdoor gold medal.
Does he?
He's the only guy ever. No, he was silver in 19.
Oh, really? Who won in 19?
Kendricks. Kendricks is always there when it matters. Man. And he was the 19 and 17 champ. So it's interesting. If you want to look at the top, let's just take the top three. And we'll talk about Lavillenie because he's been pretty good this year, too. He's been pretty solid for a guy who's been around as long as he has. But if you just look at the top three with Mondo, give Christian Nielsen second, correct? And then you have Kendricks third.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Mondo is 6-1 against Kendricks this year. So they've vaulted against each other seven times, which is awesome, indoors and out. And then you look at Nielsen, and Nielsen has lost to him seven straight since he upset Mondo at NCAAs. So he's been he's been on a bit of a revenge tour against Nielsen, but Nielsen's been pretty solid. So he's in the mix as well. I think the consensus is, you know, if everybody's at their best, obviously Mondo's going to go to a place that nobody else can go. But pole vault competitions aren't that straightforward. Kendricks' season best, 5.92, which is the same as Lavillenie's. Nilsson's at 595. You have Obina in there from the Philippines, Lisek of Poland, Braz of Brazil, who's the reigning Olympic champion. There's a lot that can happen here. I think the only one certainty this year is if Mondo is, you know, 90%, then he's going to get the gold.
Yeah, BetMGM has Mondo as minus 650, so that's heavy, heavy favorite. Kendrick's a plus 800. It's good money. But Chris Nielsen has that Matthew Centrowitz type money with 20 to 1 odds. And Nielsen beat Kendricks at USA's, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Nielsen has beaten Duplantis at NCAA's. So maybe he got, maybe he got put a couple bucks on that 20 to 1 odds. Yeah. The thing about gambling, though, on Olympics is only, there's only one champion. Right? It's not like you have like three opportunities to get the medal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you got, in the end, it's like, Mondo's going to win. Like,
I don't,
it's, yeah. It's fun putting money on Nielsen or Kendricks, but Mondo's going to win.
I think, but pole vault is, it's wonky enough to where you might want to take a flyer. And Kendricks has been good enough in major championships to where you'd at least think twice. You at least think twice about it. I do like the whole idea of Nilsson beating Mondo at NCAAs and Mondo saying never again. It's just not going to happen again. Sorry. It doesn't matter.
Here's a question.
If it's in a diamond league, any competition, I'm going to beat you from here on out.
If Mondo were to lose, mm-hmm. when do we start having a conversation? Is Mondo like... big, you know, like big stage choke artist. I mean, NCAA Outdoors, 2019 Worlds. I mean, the guy literally is the greatest vaulter the world has ever seen. He's better than anyone else. He's going to make jumping over 6 meters in his sleep. He's going to break the world record five more times in his career because he's going to keep on PRing by a centimeter. But if he were not to win, it would be kind of weird that this man who's just dominating mm-hmm. all the competitions, breaking world records left and right, can't seem to put together on the one day that matters most, which is a global championship.
I would wait to have that conversation to, well, first let's see if he loses, right?
Okay.
But then wins his other major, you listed two competitions he didn't win. One was the NCAA championships, which is not the same thing. And the other one was the 2019 World Championships. And 2019 World Championships, the gap was not the same between him and everybody else. It's different. The 2020-2021 Mondo is way, way different. Like going into that competition, Kendricks had the best vault of the year going into Doha. Mondo had vaulted 6 meters. Right, but Kendrick and Lisek, I'm looking it up now. So Mondo had the third best vault of the year. So that doesn't even count, in my opinion, as underperforming. So this would be, the NCAA upset happens, but I don't think anybody's like looking at his career in terms of NCAA championship. This he's the huge favorite here. He should win this, but I think this would be the first instance. It just seems like he's been a favorite for forever because he's been good at such a young age. And if the Olympics happened in 2020 and the World Championships were happening now, we'd probably be looking at his second gold right now. And his big 2020 happened when there was no
2020. Championships. They took it away.
Exactly. Yeah. Three more to go. Three more to go.
Let's do it.
They're all throwing events. Discus, hammer. Oh, and by the way, on that pole vault, I have U.S. medal odds at 65%. In my unofficial things that mean nothing.
I'd say 75%. 75% for Gordon.
Okay. You're always higher on me. Higher than me on these American.
I'm always higher.
Odds. Yeah. Okay. It's funny to see the chat a little bit of a delay because they're making the point that I just made, like just now, but they're just hearing it because I go back and forth to chat. They're like, wait a minute. He only lost one major championship. Okay, discus, javelin, and hammer. Discus, the story is Danny Stahl of Sweden, 2019 champ. He's got the two best throws of the year. He's been solid. Christian Che, Slovenia, he's the only other guy over 70 meters this year. Christoph Harding of Germany was the 2016 Olympic champ, but his throw is only the 28th best performance of the year, performer of the year, I should say. Let's see. From the U.S. side, Mason Finley won the trials champ. Reggie Jaggers has the best U.S. throw this year, but he was second at trials. And he's thrown 67-82, which I think came recently. Do I have that right? Was that like this week that he threw that big throw? I think it was. Anyway, what do you think of the discus? I'm thinking of somebody else. Sorry. Jaggers is 67-82 was in the beginning of June. But so you have Stahl, Che, Simone Pedersen, and then Lucas Weibhendinger. That's a tough one for me. I apologize. And then Andreas Gudnis are the top five throwers of the year.
I love listening to you say East European names. It's fun.
That was Austria. That was like Western Europe. Austria.
Western, Eastern, also. It's Europe. Just European names. So Stahl, he's thrown 7 of the top 11 marks this year, including 3 of the top 4.
Yeah.
He has shown, like, every time field events, even really any event, field and sprint, and not distance really, field and sprint, consistency wins. And someone who has consistently been throwing or running multiple marks near the top of the field, you are going to look like to do well when it comes to championship performance, because you're going to get 6 throws, you get multiple rounds. I do think that Stahl has shown going into this that he's the man to beat, and I don't think anyone beat it. Some, I mean, you could argue Christian Shea is the closest because he has 2 of the top 5. He's the only other guy in that top 5. But Stahl, I mean, he's thrown 71-40. It's almost he's a full meter better this season than Che. It's Stahl for the win. No question. His odds are only minus 225. It's not too bad. I wouldn't bet it, but
yeah.
Well, I have to. So I'm betting $100. So here's a question for you. I'm betting $100 on every event. So I'm betting $4,500 because it's 45 events. I'm not doing race walk. I'm not going to bet race walk. I don't know that.
Don't do this, guys. Don't.
Why
do
not?
Gordon's doing. No, well, you can do it. I'm saying other people don't do what you're doing.
The question is, I'm not placing all the bets on day one, right? I'm placing them the day before because of COVID. I don't want anyone to scratch and screw up. So you're either going to see my happiness go up over the trial, over the Olympics, or go down. You're going to constantly tell me, Gordon, give up. It's not worth it. Like, you're out $1,000. Yeah. Let's just end it now. I'll be like, no, man, I have still $3,000 left. So okay, we'll see how it goes.
If you're okay, I'm getting some pronunciation here. Oh wow, it's a double S in German. So Weib is pronounced like wise. Thank you, wise. Okay. Here's the problem though. If you're doing $100 per event, that means you're basically only going to be bet. You're never going to bet on anybody with minus odds, right?
Yeah, you probably shouldn't, right?
Well,
unless
you
know.
Well, you have to bet more to get any money.
No, you only win like $25.
Yeah.
So you bet $100
to win
$25.
I mean, I guess you could do that. Well, like if you're going to bet it, so you're going to bet against Krauser, you're basically just giving them $100 though.
Yeah. Well, I'm putting, maybe I need to reevaluate because it's better if there were some of the
odds. I'd love to see you lose your money, to be honest. I would love to see you lose your money.
But right now, the only odds I can find where there's odds for top 3 is the men's 100. Like, men's 100 has medal odds, which is good.
Yeah. Yes.
Which have already moved. God dang it. Oh, I should have bet this already. Like, they had Sibine as plus money, but now he's minus. So that's not good. I should put it all on Fred Curley. 12 to 1 odds to win gold. That's not happening. Anyway, let's reset. Discus. Stahl's going to win. that's what's happening. back to our regular schedule programming.
I like, again, it would be fun for me to track you throughout these Olympics and the misery that you feel. But I think when you make it X amount per event, it's going to be tough, especially when you have a situation like, I don't know, the pole vault, for example, and someone's just like a huge favorite. If you're putting down $100 on a minus 800 bet, I don't even know if they'll even take that. I don't know how that works. I could ask Jason. He knows more about this stuff.
Well, they'll take it. So. You just win $8. That's the difference.
Right. And then what's your transaction fee? I mean, then you got to really ask yourself.
There's no transaction fees. Are there transaction fees?
There's transaction fees in life. That's just
that's true. No, here's the thing. I just want to give myself, like, this is the amount of money I'm willing to lose, and then play, and then go.
Right. That's the game. I think you should.
I don't want to chase money. I just want to, like, pick a number.
Yeah, but I think you should be more judicious with where you put it and not just say, it's going to be an even amount on every single event. True.
I should take like because, 500 on one event and not 100 on five events.
Yeah. Like go where perfect. You think there's actual value and do that.
I appreciate you giving me this advice.
Well, because you're just locking yourself into, you're just, now this could backfire because maybe statistically speaking, you'll win on some underdogs and that'll be better. And I should probably tell you to go against your instincts because your instincts are usually wrong, as anybody who's seen the rankings or listened to you have a take understands. But like you could just force yourself into some bets that are bad and you're just giving them $100 basically versus.
That's true.
I mean, how confident are you in at least one out of every four like second place people winning? Like in terms of by second place, I mean the second best odds.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to reevaluate. Maybe I don't know yet. I have to make my Excel sheets. I have to figure it out. Here's the thing. I'm not a big gambler. And so this would be the first time I've ever like gambled major money on sports. I figured this is where I start because I feel like I know track and field better than I know like how many points the Eagles are going to score. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's good that I'm constantly like overthinking it because that means I care about money because I don't want to lose.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
There's one that I saw that piqued my interest, but we could talk about it next week because I think it might actually move. Anyway, Hammer, Paweł Fajek of Poland, your number one ranked athlete. He's thrown 82.98 this year. 83.93 is his personal best. He's won the last four world titles, but Gordon, but. He has five losses this year. I'm willing to bet he's your only number one ranked athlete across any discipline that has lost five times this year. Several of those losses have come to Nowicki, his countryman, who's beaten him four times. He's also lost four times to him. So that's an interesting battle to watch with Poland. Rudy Winkler of the U.S. trials champ in that American record, 82.71. He's in the mix. Then you have Kokan of Ukraine in there as your number four ranked thrower. Trivia question, Gordon. How many times have the two Polish throwers, Fajek and Nowicki, competed against each other?
How many times? In their careers?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let's see how long his career's been. Ooh, about 10 plus years. 60.
102.
Oh wow! All right.
Yeah.
You got the record? You got the record?
I do have the record. Do you want to know? Let me pull it up.
I do want to know. We got to keep going down this segment bit. So you got to keep going.
No, it was interesting to me because I thought, well, how many active track and field athletes in general have competed against each other 102 times? So Fajek and Nowicki of Poland. 81-21 in favor of Fajek. 81-21 in favor of Fajek. Going back to their first competition was 2009 Polish National Championships. I have U.S. odds here 25% because I think Winkler is solid.
25%, I feel like. Winkler is solid, but yeah. When's the last time a U.S. athlete in the men's U.S. athlete has medaled? in the hammer?
In the Olympics?
Or in the global championships?
Well, you go back to Lance Diehl in 96, obviously.
It's a long time.
Let's look at world championships. They're not as strong as the women, as we talked about last time. Right? That's the a lock of all locks on the women's side of things. Up here. Men's hammer. That's Olympics. Dang it, I can't find it. Can't find it. Someone will in the chat will let me know. Speaking of the chat, they have thoughts on your gambling. A good point here. Someone says $100 per event is more fun and better for content. So
that is true.
That is true. So what do you love more, content or your money?
I mean, part of me wanting to do it is for the content. And we could just say like, hey, I'm up and down. And like, did I lose $300 or $400 today? Or did I make $300 or $400? So,
yeah. And again, it might be a way to fall backwards into some success too, because you'd be forced to pick a long shot. And then that would basically, you know, you hit on two of those and that sustains you. So I don't know.
I just feel like I looked at my rankings in 2019 and I've correctly picked like 55 to 60% of the gold medal winners.
Okay.
So I would think if I can correctly predict 55 to
60% per event. $200 per event.
But if I could correctly predict 60% of the Olympic champions, that should be able to get my money back. But the problem is, I'm only going to win like $50 for picking Trayvon Bromell and lose $100.
Yeah. Okay, Okay, here's a scenario. I'll just give you a scenario. Men's high hurdles. Who do you think is going to win?
Grant Holloway.
Okay, so according to the odds I'm looking at here, you'd have to bet 250 to win 100 with Grant Holloway. So if you want to go into plus odds, Ronald Levy of Jamaica, who's a plus 750. So you could make 750, but what do you think the chances of Ronald Levy beating Grant Holloway are?
Well, there's just going to be people who I have to stay away from, right? You don't pick against Holloway. You don't pick against Mondo.
Saying for content, you need to pick every event is what they're saying for content.
Yeah, so I would just bet $100 on Grant Holloway.
Yeah.
And then I win $25, whatever his odds are. So I come back with $125. So I'm risking $100 to win $25. That's what I would do. And if I do that, but like if I pick five favorites and then combined, I make $150 after betting $500. Mm-hmm. So it's not good odds. It's not good. You probably shouldn't do it, but content. Because every time going into every final, we're like, who do you think is going to win? Right?
Yeah.
And all we have to, I just know whoever I say could lose $100 because of it. So it's like a lot more pressure in who I pick because I'm like, I think Grant Holloway is going to win. And I may lose $100 for saying that. Mm-hmm. So
last event here.
Yeah.
Javelin. Johannes Vetter. Speaking of a lock, he's the lock of all locks. Gordon, top seven throws of the year. He scored 96-29, only guy over 90 meters. He was bronze in 2019, but that was his last loss. Undefeated. 2020, 2021. Gold in 26-17 as well. Other people who will factor in the medals, Chopra of India, Krukowski of Poland, Walcott, Trinidad and Tobago, Mardare of Moldova. And then you have Michael Hsu of the U.S., who was second at the trials and just threw 85 meters recently. Puts him ninth on the list this year. And then Anderson Peters, 2019 champ, but he's only thrown 83-46 this year. Feel good about Vetter. Feel very good about Vetter. Everybody else pretty low. I guess I'd put the U.S. medal odds at somewhere around 5%.
Yeah, Vetter's going to win. He's the best. He's the Mondo of the javelin right now. Without the championship, with the championship pedigree. So,
yeah,
that's what I got to say about that.
I guess with Vetter, it's just, man, that type of consistency and just the PB that much better than everybody else who's in the mix this year makes him a pretty big favorite. So,
yeah,
javelin.
Seven of the top seven marks.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look like, I mean, the drop off, because if you just look, if you just sort it by everybody's best mark, it goes from 96.29 to Krakowski's 89.55. So it's almost 7 meters there.
And let's see if Krakowski's ever thrown over 90.
I don't think
personal best. He's never thrown over 90.
Yeah.
So even if you take PB, if Krakowski doesn't beat Vetter, and then Walcott of Trinidad and Tobago, his personal best is 90.16 from 2015, which is not going to repeat. So, yeah, Vetter is the heavy. Yeah,
it's got to be weird going into Olympic competition and being like, hey, I just need to throw within 5 meters of my best, and I can win. It's got to be an interesting headspace to be in.
Yeah, so I'm gonna bet $100 on Vetter, and I will win $20. It's gonna be great.
Oh man. Okay, I think that'll do it. Is that it? That's everything on the field event side of things. So if you missed the beginning of the show, if you're tuning in live, the people listening on the podcast know they've already listened to it. But we did Centro at the top and then the marathon first, then the decathlon. So if you missed the beginning, you can go back and grab that. Next week we're doing the running event previews.
So yeah, yeah.
Monday.
And also, we have a live event in 2 days at the Under Armour Sunset Tour in California. Big names, Brandon Kidder, Drew Windle in the men's 800. Robbie Andrews is there. 800, Ephraimson, Olivia Baker, Emily Richards, blah, 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 blah. Nia Akins, Nikki Hiltz, Allie Wilson, Marta Freitas in the 8. 1500, you got Sarah Vaughn, Carissa Nelson, Ellie Hines, Dana Mecki, Eleanor Fulton. I think the best event, though, will be the men's 1500. You got Sam Prakel, Eric Jenkins, Vincent Cietti, Charles Philip Thibault, Louis Grijalva, Johnny Gregoric, Isaac Yorks, Henry Nguyen, Paul Ryan, not the congressman, and Eric Avila. So that men's 800, 1500 should be good. And then women's 5K, Josette Norris coming off her sub 4 is going for another fast 5K. So that should be really good. It's a great meet. It's on July 25th. So watch that live on Flow.
All right. Thanks to Colt. Thanks to Travis. Again, next week, Monday, will be the women's running event previews. Wednesday will be the men's running event previews. And then starting Friday morning, we'll go live recapping in the morning the day's action. It'll make sense. We're going to get on Tokyo time. We're going to be on Tokyo time. It'll all make sense. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Subscribe to the YouTube page. Subscribe to the podcast. We'll talk to you guys next week.